Welcome, all you sinners and sodomites, to episode 7 of Bible Stories for Atheists. I am Josh.
I'm Linz.
And we are your guides to the sacredly savage stories, literally, literarily littering the Bible.
Nice.
Thank you. We don't have much to go over in the intro, but one thing I do want to call out is that we set up a shop. If you feel like supporting the podcast, if you enjoy the podcast, check out the shop. You can go to BibleStoriesForAtheists.com or BSFA.cc to get to the website. And then there should be a link in the header for going to our shop. So
yeah, there's a lot of super cute stuff out there, you guys. Yes.
And we're going to keep adding new things to it too over time. But we decided to just get it up and running. So take a look. This episode, we're going to be digging into the plagues.
Yep.
Throughout Exodus, and then the actual Exodus itself, where they leave Egypt. All right, so we're going to be starting off in the middle of chapter 7 of the book of Exodus, and this is stuck between a desert and Pharaoh's hard place. All right. Another week, another
horror
Bible
story.
Yeah, another horror story from the Bible. We actually took a little bit of time off here.
We did because you were sick.
Because I was sick.
And the last thing we wanted to do is subject people to a podcast full of you coughing or make you have to edit all of those coughs out.
Right.
And an hour and a half podcast turns into a 30-minute podcast.
Yeah. And there still will probably be a couple coughs here and there that I have to. Yeah.
Doesn't have COVID, though.
No COVID. COVID. Yep. Got tested. We are good to go. So last we left off, we had that crazy mushroom trip in the desert with Moses where he saw that burning bush and it talked to them, talked to him. And then Moses comes back with his brother Aaron to tell Pharaoh to let
my people go.
Let my people go.
Yep.
And you might be surprised to find out Pharaoh did not.
No.
And the reason why Pharaoh did not is because God hardened his heart.
That's right.
Multiple times
That's
God
right.
said that.
Yes. I forgot that he was telling Moses to do one thing and then making it almost completely impossible
right.
for him to actually do those things.
Yeah, so, which is kind of funny when Christians talk about God doesn't give you anything more than you can handle.
Right.
Here's an example where God is literally saying,
this
thing and I'm not going to make it work out
no.
for you.
Yeah, I'm going to make it. It's going to be hard for you
yeah.
for no reason other than I said it was going to be.
Yeah, because I'm just deciding it's going to be hard.
I'm testing you.
Right.
Right? Isn't that what it is? God's testing you. I've heard that said out of people's mouths so many times. Oh, God's really testing me.
It's one of those excuses.
It's like, yeah. Is that what God does? He tests you?
Right. Because God can't punish you because you're supposed to be saved and everything. So therefore, God must be testing you.
Okay.
Is the idea, I think.
I see. He's very complicated, this being.
Yes. Yeah. Well, his ways are bigger than ours, Lindsay.
I see.
Yeah.
He just seems like a real dude about the whole thing.
He's just a real dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so we've gotten through, you know, all the warnings to Pharaoh. Well, sort of. We have some more warnings, but this is when the plagues start.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. Pow, pow, pow.
I was making it so that you didn't have to do sound effects later.
I was going to say, no, ladies and gentlemen, those were not sound effects added in post-production. Those are done in real time. Lindsay's like our own little side soundboard.
Pew, 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 pew. Well, that just sounded terrible, Josh.
All the signs and wonders of God. So God comes to Moses. We're just going to kick things right off here.
Okay.
God comes to Moses and says to go to Pharaoh and warn him
about the plagues.
About specifically the plague of blood.
All right.
So he goes down to the river, tells Pharaoh, let my people go because there's going to be a plague of blood. He says that the Nile is going to turn to blood and it will, all the fish will die.
Okay.
And the river is going to stink.
Yeah, it just sounds like that red algae bloom that the Nile gets every year.
So what's interesting about this is throughout this, my NIV study Bible has all of these naturalistic explanations for not all of the plagues, but several of them.
Right.
One of them is that. One thing that's interesting too is it points out that some of these might have been some of the plagues might have been caused by other plagues. You know?
Right.
So yeah, according to my study Bible, I didn't realize this, but apparently the Nile flows north, mm-hmm. which into the Mediterranean Sea. I thought it came from the Mediterranean Sea. In Ethiopia, a bunch of red sediment apparently every year gets mm-hmm. stirred up and it can turn the Nile red.
Yep.
So this would be like an extreme circumstance of it, you know, but it would have turned all of the water red.
And killed the fish.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, and killed the fish and everything.
Right.
What's interesting about that, though, is according to this, it doesn't just, I believe, if I remember correctly from when I read through, it's even in vessels of wood and stone that the water turns to blood.
So it's
not just in the water in the Nile.
All the water.
Literally all the water
in
Egypt is turned to blood.
Is it just that all the women in Egypt, their cycles were synced up?
I mean, are they hovering over their drinking containers at the time?
They got to wash themselves sometime.
Are they doing it with their drinking water? You know? But yeah, that's the thing. Like, that kind of bugs me about the study notes on this is, all right, it's interesting that they give a naturalistic explanation at all, mm-hmm. but it doesn't account for that water in right. vessels is also being turned to blood.
Sure.
You know?
Well, and there's a huge difference between the viscosity of blood.
Yes.
That's not in the body. Okay, let's look at this from a scientific perspective.
Sure.
Blood that's in the body is actually water-like, right? It only coagulates.
It's mostly water.
Yeah. Once it hits the air, like once you take it out of the body, it starts to coagulate
right.
and gets real thick. So if a river had blood in it,
yes,
one would assume that the viscosity of the river would slow down. If it
right.
was just sediment, it would be just red water, I would assume.
Right, exactly.
So you would think that they would be able to tell the difference between
blood
and just red water.
Right. Yeah.
So that those notes, what I'm saying is those notes are bullshit.
I know. It totally is. It totally is.
Although it probably, if this actually happened... probably didn't, but if it actually happened, it was more likely a natural event than it was a rivers of blood. And then somebody added the flair of like, it's also in all the vessels.
Right. So one thing that when we originally started talking about this before the podcast ever happened, and this is what, you know, kicked off the podcast was talking about the story. So one of the things that we talked about was, you were asking about was like, how did Moses kick off these plagues?
Oh, right. Did he start them?
Was it God that did it? So this is one in which God tells him to tell Aaron to raise his staff in the presence of Pharaoh and strike the water of the Nile.
Oh, so Aaron did it.
Yes. Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord commanded. He raised his staff in the presence of
Aaron
tell
getting
Aaron
any credit?
Take your staff.
Like, as a non-religious person, like, I knew who Moses was. I knew about the, like, you know, the base story about Moses. Poor Aaron really got cut out of that story.
Well, he's barely in Prince of Egypt.
Really?
And he's actually a naysayer throughout the whole thing. He's kind of a dick.
He sounds pretty involved in the whole thing.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Prince of Egypt was a terrible representation of the story. Yeah. Good movie, but a terrible representation of the actual story.
Was it a good movie, Josh?
Yeah, I mean,
in hindsight,
it did
when you think about it.
It did what it was trying to do.
Okay.
You know, it made me cry a little when I was a kid. And by that, I mean a 14-year-old.
Ah, okay.
Who was very into Jesus.
I'm glad we met later in life.
Yeah. Yes, I know. So Aaron struck the staff into the Nile and it changed the water to blood.
Okay.
Blood was everywhere in Egypt.
Okay. Weird, gross. Weird and gross.
The Egyptian magicians, which is a really fun thing to say, the Egyptian magicians did the same things by their secret arts, which if it turned all the water to blood, what water was left for them to turn to blood is my question.
So they did that, and then the magicians were like, us too.
Yeah,
and
we can do it too.
Did it too?
Yeah, so therefore, Yahweh is not as good or is at least as good as the Egyptian gods.
Okay.
I think is the idea behind that.
All right.
Right.
So if this terrible thing has happened, and instead of trying to like fix the problem, the Egyptian magicians are like, oh yeah? Well, our gods are just as powerful as your fucking god. Watch this.
Yeah.
Well, that seems helpful.
Right. I know. What would have been really cool is if they had just been able to be like, well, we turned it back.
Gone. Right.
Yeah.
It's purer than it was before it changed to blood.
Right. We changed it to Evian.
And so, Nestle was born. Right.
And then it says that all the Egyptians dug along the Nile to get drinking water because they could not drink the water of the river. So that's how they actually survived this.
Oh, so the water in the actual ground was fine?
Yeah. So like, so if they dug along it, then the dirt would be filtering out the blood, which
how they figured out irrigation.
Yeah. I think they already knew irrigation at this point.
And filtering.
Yeah, but I would say that's another sign that this was actually, if any of this is true, obviously, they're talking about sediment, not actually blood. Right,
because
you can't filter blood.
Water. not with sand.
Not with sand, no. Can't turn blood into water with sand. So then that's the plague of blood.
Plague of blood.
Yeah, the Pharaoh's heart became hard when he saw that the magicians were able to do the same thing.
I think you should say dick instead of heart every time that comes up.
And God made Pharaoh's dick hard. And
Pharaoh's dick became hard.
Yeah. Pharaoh hardened his dick.
It totally changes the story 100%. Yeah, I would really read that Bible.
Yeah. I'm just picturing the magicians turning water into blood and his dick getting hard.
We need someone who can like draw this picture. Yeah. For us.
He's wearing some sort of white robe and is just pitching a major tent. But that's not what the Bible says. So 7 days later, after the Lord struck the Nile, the Lord said to Moses to go to Pharaoh again and to warn him of a plague of frogs.
Ah, yes.
The Nile is going to teem with frogs. It's going to get into your households, into your bedroom, and onto your bed. It's going to get into your ovens and your kneading troughs.
Oven frogs.
Oven frogs.
That sounds like dinner just bringing itself to you.
Right, yeah. And he tells Aaron to stretch out his hand with his staff over the streams, canals, and ponds and make frogs come up on the land of Egypt.
I thought the frogs rained down.
No, I thought so too, but I really wonder if the entire reason I think that is because of Magnolia, the movie Magnolia, which is a great scene in that movie. But I think that's the only reason I think that.
Interesting.
Or maybe there's some old biblical movie where they did that, but that's not what the Bible says. I feel
like anytime they get into like plague sort of stuff in movies or in media,
yeah,
there it's always frogs raining
right
down from the sky.
But that's not in here whatsoever.
Well, that makes way more sense.
Yeah. Well, and then the Bible, then the study notes give another naturalistic explanation for this of, well, if the flooded river with the sediment is so bad, then the frogs would be coming out of the Nile River and into,
right,
you know, they'd be escaping the river because it's polluted, yeah, basically right now.
Sure. I mean, yes, that does make sense.
Yeah.
For sure. Seems like a lot of frogs living in the river.
Right.
You would think you would know if there were that many frogs in a river.
Right.
If there's enough frogs to come out of the river to, yeah, overtake a city.
Right. Right.
And crawl in, put their own bodies into ovens. So not only are they frogs, they're stupid frogs.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, this heat source, let me crawl into it. Because this isn't like an oven we own.
No.
These are like open fires.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then what's weird yet again is the magicians were able to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they, I would love it if they had gone into some detail of how did these magicians then demonstrate that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like, what did that look
like? And again, why?
Yeah.
Other than bravado.
Yeah. If they really wanted to be powerful, they should have been able to get rid of the frogs.
They've been like, hey guys, I made frog legs for everybody. Let's eat.
Yeah. They just open up a frog leg restaurant.
Yeah.
And that's how they get rid
of
it. Delicious. So Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron. And was basically tired of the frogs. So he told them, pray to the Lord to take the frogs away from me and my people, and I will let your people go and offer sacrifices to the Lord. And so Moses, there's this odd interaction here where Moses is like, I leave to you the honor of setting the time for me to pray to get rid of these frogs and everything. And it'll get and they'll all be gone except for those remaining in the Nile River. And Pharaoh says tomorrow for some reason. Like, I would have been like, dude, do it now. I want it done now.
If you pray to your God to get rid of these frogs, I will let you do whatever you want. Hey, man, that's cool. What time you want me to do that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is tomorrow good for you?
Right. It's an odd, like, just do it now. It's prayer. It doesn't really require that much effort, you know? So Moses prays, and then only the frogs in the Nile remained.
Where did the frogs go?
That's a good question. I think the frogs will leave you and your house and your officials. They will remain only in the Nile. Yeah, I got the impression like they just went. Oh, I'm sorry, I totally forgot. It says later in here the frogs died in the houses. I totally forgot about this.
That sounds worse.
Yeah. Yeah, the frogs died in the houses. They were piled into heaps and the land reeked of them. Oh, but when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his dick and would not listen to Moses or Aaron.
It's just so much.
Just as the Lord had said.
It's just so much better that way.
So next, the Lord says to Aaron, there's no warning to Pharaoh this time. So there's like these little subtle differences between each plague. So this time we don't have them going to Pharaoh first.
Okay.
Lord says to Moses to tell Aaron to stretch out his staff and strike the dust of the ground, and the dust will become gnats.
Ew.
Yeah.
Why though? Pharaoh said that they could go into the...
No, but then when there was relief, you must have missed that. When I said when all the frogs died, Pharaoh saw that there was relief,
yeah,
and he hardened his dick.
Yeah.
And
he changed his mind.
And did not let them go.
Yeah. I got stuck on the dick. I'm sorry. Whatever you said after that, I did not hear.
Right. Which is probably why they didn't say that.
Right.
In the Bible.
Yeah. That's makes sense.
All people would care about.
Yeah. That's fair. Okay. So gnats.
So, yeah. So turned all of the dust in Egypt, which, ugh, you got to imagine Egypt is quite dusty. turned them all to gnats. The gnats came on, sounds funny. The gnats came on the people and animals. All the dust throughout the land of Egypt became gnats. When the magicians tried to produce gnats by their secret arts, they could not.
Oh.
Since the, which is a weird, like, they got the first two and then the rest they can't really
pull off.
Blood
and frogs, good. Gnats?
Yeah.
Out of their wheelhouse.
Yeah. Ugh. Since the gnats were on people and on animals everywhere, the magicians said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." I don't understand.
The middle finger of God.
Right. But Pharaoh's dick was hard. And he would not listen, just as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Get up early in the morning and go confront Pharaoh." So again, he's going to go talk to Pharaoh. And he warns him of a swarm of flies. So we went from gnats now to actual flies. Oh, and I missed this. Oh, no. Nope. Gnats did not have a naturalistic explanation, really.
It's really hard to explain how dust turns into gnats naturally, other than like the whole ground was covered in gnat eggs.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be that there was just a big swarm of gnats, but
it,
like.
It does say, though, I guess. So I guess there's a little bit of a naturalistic explanation where it says the gnats bred in the flooded fields of Egypt in late autumn. So because the fields were flooded, that gave them breeding grounds.
Right. I'm pretty sure gnats can fly.
Yeah.
So
they buzz. They can buzz around. Yeah.
So, but they're going to go from little flies to what, bigger flies?
No, I think these are totally different species. These are like actual like flies, large flies.
That's what I'm saying. They're literally just going from one insect to another insect.
Oh, I thought you were saying like the gnats like
make went bigger.
Yeah, morphed into. Yes.
No. I'm sorry. Flies. The plagues are going like. It was like
yes,
it little got flies, and then God was like, ugh, make them bigger.
Right. Yes.
And so the next one was just bigger flies.
Yep.
Okay.
He warns Pharaoh of the swarms of flies. They're going to be on your people and in your houses, and the ground will be covered with them. Ugh. The Lord said, "I will deal differently with the land of Goshen," which is where the Israelites settled.
Yep. It's where all the sheep herders were.
Yes, exactly. And this will occur tomorrow. And the Lord did this. So this is the first one where Aaron did not have to kick it off. Mm. The Lord just created dense swarms of flies that poured into Pharaoh's palace and into the houses of his officials. So Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron, said, "Go sacrifice to your God, but do it here in the land." And Moses is like, "The sacrifices we're going to offer are detestable to Egyptians. Like, they're going to stone us if we do it here," which really makes me curious about, like, what the fuck are these sacrifices?
I know.
Yeah.
And like, can't Pharaoh just be like, "No, we won't"? Like, he's
Pharaoh.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could just give them a pass, but he doesn't. He says, "I will let you go off and into the wilderness, but you must not go very far. Now pray for me, you know, to get rid of the flies." Mm-hmm. And he does, and the flies go away. And then you might be surprised that Pharaoh hardened his dick. So
he really doesn't learn from any of this.
He doesn't. No, the naturalistic explanation for this one that they give is that the flies probably would have multiplied rapidly from the receding Nile.
And the dead frogs.
Yeah, probably. You
got fucking piles of dead frogs.
Right.
You're going to have a fly problem.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the receding Nile would have left a bunch of pools of water.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Sure.
And what's interesting too is there's no actual explanation of time between these plagues, except on rare occasions where it says like 7 days later,
right.
You know, or something like that. But next we get a plague of livestock.
Oh, I was like, a plague of livestock?
Yeah, it's a plague on livestock, really.
Oh my gosh, the cows are coming.
Yeah. So Moses is told to go to Pharaoh and give him a warning. There's going to be a terrible plague on your livestock. All of the horses, donkeys, and camels and your cattle are going, and sheep and goats. But no animal belonging to the Israelites will die, but all the livestock for Egyptians will die.
So the plague is just like sickness of the livestock?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if the lions were released or something.
No. So it's going to just bring about sickness to the livestock. So the naturalistic explanation for this is that's what the flies brought. That the flies brought bacteria to infect the livestock.
Okay. It's funny that they provide these explanations because it does make sense, right?
Yeah.
Like animals can get diseases from insects.
Right.
And it could take a while. It could take a bit of time from when they were bitten to when it manifests. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like they're saying, like, God didn't do any of this by giving those explanations.
I know. It's a weird thing. But obviously, like, not all of these plagues, they're going to have explanations for. Right. But it is odd that they provide these.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that they do. Like, I'm glad that they...
It's interesting that they would offer up that information.
Yeah.
Because it really just makes it sound like Moses is taking advantage of the situation. Is what it sounds like when they... add that piece of information, I think, well, Moses is just being like, yeah, that totally was God. He's mad at you.
Yeah, the fact that sometimes they give a warning and sometimes they don't is interesting to me. Yeah, Pharaoh's dick was unyielding and he would not let the people go. So the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take handfuls of soot from a furnace and have Moses toss it in the air in the presence of Pharaoh, and it will become fine dust over the whole land of Egypt, and festering boils will break out on the people and animals throughout the land. So this is the plague of boils.
Okay. That they got from burning the sick animals, and that made the people get sick.
It might be. It's the soot from a furnace is what it says.
Yeah, of dead sick animals.
It might be. So the naturalistic explanation for this one, possibly this is skin anthrax, a variety of the plague that struck the livestock. A black burning abscess that develops into a pustule.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Everybody in Egypt gets this?
Apparently, except obviously, I'm sure it doesn't say it specifically, but I'm sure it would be not the Israelites.
Right? I mean, it would be weird for them to spare their cattle, but then give them boils.
Yes. And then this is the first time that we find out that the Lord hardened Pharaoh's dick.
Sexy.
Yeah. So, So specifically, this is the Lord saying, like, up to this point, it was all Pharaoh, you know, hardening his heart and not hearing
But we knew that the Lord was hardening his heart.
Well,
we knew so as that, readers.
That's the thing. Yeah. But if you're actually going through this and reading it, it's almost like for the first few plagues, it's Pharaoh's choice.
Okay.
And at this point, the way I kind of read it is that Pharaoh probably would have given up at this point.
Yeah. Yes.
But now it's God saying, nope, we're in this. You're going to keep denying them what they want, and we are going to keep killing you.
That's a real fucker of a move.
I know. It's a shitty move. It's because there's a lot of pain and suffering coming from this that did not have to happen. And then Moses has to go confront Pharaoh yet again and give him a warning. First of all, the Lord says that by now you should see that I could have created a plague that wiped all of you out, you know? And yet, for some reason, you are not giving in to the demands.
I wonder what the reason could be.
Yeah. I will send the worst hailstorm that has ever fallen on Egypt.
Okay. That just doesn't sound as bad as the other ones. A hailstorm?
It's actually pretty bad.
Is it?
Because it's going to take out everything, everyone who does not take shelter, essentially. So what's interesting about this one...
Sky bullets.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So what's interesting about this one is it's the first one where it's like, if the Egyptians want to avoid the wrath, they can. They just have to take shelter.
Right.
You know? So anybody who believes in Yahweh at this point, anybody who's Egyptian or Israelite, this all together, can bring in their livestock, can bring in their slaves.
Oh, they get and everything. They know ahead of time that this is going
to
happen.
Yeah, because they're proclaiming this to everybody. Really, okay.
They knew time and date and all that good stuff. Or
he gives a heads up that it'll be by this time tomorrow.
Okay,
I will send the worst hailstorm, and I think this is another one that the hail did not fall over Goshen. But the rest of Egypt got this hail. Lord says to Moses, stretch out your hand towards the sky. And that kicks things off. There's thunder and hail. Lightning flashed back and forth.
Sounds metal.
It sounds metal. Yeah. It's pretty heavy metal. And the hail struck everything in the fields, both people and animals. It beat down everything growing in the fields and stripped every tree.
Wow.
Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, this time I have sinned. The Lord is in the right, and I and my people are in the wrong. Pray to the Lord, for we have had enough thunder and hail. I will let you go. You don't have to stay any longer. Moses basically says there won't be any more hail, but I know you and your officials haven't learned any lessons from this. There's an interesting parenthetical here where it gets very specific about some stuff. It says the flax and barley were destroyed since the barley had headed and the flax was in bloom. The wheat and spelt, however, were not destroyed because they ripen later. Mm. So in case you were wondering about that.
Yeah, which crops were destroyed and which ones weren't.
Right.
I wonder if you look back in time to the agricultural history of Egypt, if you will find that they used to grow all four of those things. And then after some time, they only grew the two. Like, historically, they became a place that did wheat and spelt instead of the other two. And this is how they explained why.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. I don't know. Yeah, it could be. It certainly could be. It could be that we've got the plague of locusts coming up next, which those
had to
have something to eat. That might be the other thing. So turns out, though, that Pharaoh's dick was hard, and so he would not let the Israelites go. Might be surprising, but yeah, so still didn't happen.
How does his dick keep getting hard?
Yeah.
It's like he never learns. Disaster after disaster. Hard dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yep. Then Moses says, go to Pharaoh, for I have hardened his dick and the dicks of all of his officials.
Why has Moses asked God yet? Is this coming up? Is this come up at all? Does Moses go like, why do you keep doing that?
Nope. Never once.
I could have left.
Yeah.
Like, we literally could have just left. And then you were like, nah, more. We're going to do more shit. We're going to fuck these Egyptians up.
Right.
Bad,
man. And God specifically says several times, it's all because of my glory.
Ah.
It's God's ego.
Fuck, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such bullshit.
I know. So go to Pharaoh. I have hardened his dick and the dicks of his officials. I will bring locusts. They will devour what little you have left. They will fill your houses and those of your officials and all Egyptians. And then Pharaoh's officials start turning on Pharaoh. They start saying, how long will we let this man be a snare to us? Let the people go so that they may worship the Lord their God. Do you not realize yet that Egypt is ruined? Then Moses and Aaron were brought before Pharaoh. He says, go worship the Lord your God, but tell me who will be going. Who's going to go with you when you go? And Moses...
coming with me.
Yeah. And Moses says that we're going to bring everybody, young and old, our sons and our daughters, the flocks and our herds, to go celebrate a festival for God. And Pharaoh said, the Lord be with you. If I let you go along with your women and children, clearly you are bent on evil. So basically what he's saying is, you're not coming back.
Yeah.
I think it's
because women and children don't like to celebrate.
Right. Well, actually, so there is a footnote that says that men only typically would be doing something like this, where you go and worship God and offer sacrifices.
Okay.
That would be a men only thing.
Makes sense.
Which, you know, what isn't?
Stupid.
What isn't a men only thing, right?
Yeah.
Pharaoh's basically like, you can only take the men with you, and that's obviously not okay. So the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over Egypt so that locusts swarmed the land, devoured the fields and whatnot. And then the Lord made an east wind that blew across the land all day and all night. And by morning had brought the locusts. They covered the ground until it was black.
Yeah, I've heard that locusts can be quite swarmy.
It says in the footnotes, this was God's action, even if he used natural events and greatly intensified them. In March or April, the prevailing east winds would sometimes bring hordes of migratory locusts. 50 million of them could occupy less than a half a square mile and devour as much as 100,000 tons of vegetation in a single night. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Such locust plagues were greatly feared in ancient times and became a powerful symbol of divine judgment.
Mm.
So,
but as we know, locusts have cyclical lifespans, right?
Yes.
So likely not God related at all.
Right. Doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Certainly doesn't have to be. So Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, I have sinned against the Lord, your God, and against you. Now forgive me my sin and basically get rid of this plague. And so Moses prayed and God got rid of the locusts and carried them to the Red Sea on a wind.
Okay.
Right. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's dick and he would not let the Israelites go. Plague of darkness is up next. So this is an interesting one. So the naturalistic explanation for this is that there's apparently usually a sandstorm every year in early spring called the Khamsin, I think is how you pronounce that. And this would be like a really bad one where it causes darkness across everything. But this thing never, the Bible never actually says anything about a sandstorm here.
Right. It wasn't an eclipse?
It lasts for, I think, 3 days. So probably not.
No.
So the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand towards the sky so that darkness spreads over Egypt. A darkness that can be felt.
Ah, like sand.
It may be, but I it's not what it says. I feel like they would know how to describe sand. So for 3 days, Egyptians could not see anything or move around really because it was so dark. Yet all the Israelites had light in the places where they lived. So Pharaoh summoned Moses, says, go. Worship the Lord, even with your women and children, but you need to leave the flocks and the herds behind.
Okay.
And Moses is like, hey, man, once we get out there, we're not going to know what we're going to need to sacrifice, so we need to bring the flocks and the herds.
Mm-hmm. We might need to kill them in the name of God.
Yeah, we just don't know which ones we're going to need.
Yeah.
You know, so we need to bring everything.
Or how many, or...
Right.
Also why we need to bring the women and children.
Yet another weird thing where it's like, why are we even negotiating over this stuff? They're not going to be gone for 3 days, no matter what. This is leading towards, everybody knows this is leading towards them just leaving.
Right.
Why are they doing these mock negotiations at all? You know, it's just a weird thing about this. And it's kind of frustrating where it's like, why is there any negotiation whatsoever?
Well, so feel like the Egyptians are weak enough at this point with all of the shit that they've just been through that they could just leave and nobody would do anything.
Right.
Everybody else in the kingdom would probably be like, yeah, get the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
All of my herds are dead. I have no food to eat. I have all these scars from these boils. There's holes in my roof now from this fucking hail.
Right.
Just let him fucking go.
I hate gnats.
Oh my God. Sick of frog.
Never want to smell another frog again. So he's basically like, our livestock needs to go too. The Lord hardened Pharaoh's dick and said he won't let him go. There's this interesting thing where he says, get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again. The day you see my face, you will die. And it's just kind of an interesting thing that
Pharaoh says this to Moses.
Pharaoh says that to Moses. And it's kind of an interesting thing because if there's that kind of darkness in the land, then he probably, while they're talking, he probably can't see him, you know? So just kind of this interesting thing.
And this is, so to go back to the beginning, this Pharaoh is, I mean, obviously not related to Moses, but like they grew up together, right?
In theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As like pseudo brothers.
Right. What's interesting about that though, is when you actually go through this story and read it, none of that's ever addressed. Kind of like that story about Moses of being raised by the Egyptians doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the story.
Interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. Yes. Where like,
other than it's the, it's the plot point that allows him to be there.
It allows him to be there. It also allows
an audience with the Pharaoh.
It also is the only thing that explains why this Israelite has an Egyptian name.
Right. Ah.
It is the only thing that...
Interesting.
And it seems to be the only reason why that story is in there is to explain him having an Egyptian name.
Okay.
So Pharaoh, let's see, blah, 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 Pharaoh's dick, hard.
I was just about to take a drink of water when you said that. I'm so glad I waited.
It says, you will not see my face. The day you see my face, you will die. And Moses responds to that. Just as you say, I will never appear before you again. So this is the last time they're going to see each other.
Okay.
The Lord says to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh in Egypt. And after that, he will let you go. Tell the people that women and men and women alike are to go to their neighbors and ask for articles of silver and gold. There's a parenthetical here. The Lord made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and Moses himself was highly regarded in Egypt by Pharaoh's officials and by the people. It's a weird thing.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you could go one way or the other. You could either hate Moses because he brought all these plagues.
Right.
Or... you watch your Pharaoh keep making these terrible decisions that keep bringing on these plagues.
Yeah.
And like, you're like reframing it in your mind. Well, at least Moses told us about this stuff before it happened and allowed us to, like, you know, hide from the hail. And he seems like a good guy. It's just that Pharaoh keeps hardening his dick and won't let him go.
Right. Yeah. What's interesting to me, though, about that is that Moses supposedly is the person writing these. Mm-hmm. And he's the one saying Moses himself was highly regarded in Egypt by Pharaoh's officials and by the people.
That's true. Yeah. Self-aggrandizing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So Moses said that this is what the Lord says about midnight-ish, you know. Somewhere, give or take.
Yeah, they didn't have clocks.
No. I will go throughout Egypt. Every firstborn son in Egypt will die. From the firstborn son of Pharaoh to the firstborn son of a female slave.
No matter how old they are?
Yeah, no matter how old they are. To the firstborn of cattle will die. There will be a loud wailing throughout Egypt. But among the Israelites, not a dog will bark. Then you will know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel.
In case you didn't figure it out yet.
Yeah. As if that hasn't been brought up enough so far.
Right.
The Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh will refuse to listen to you. Moses and Aaron performed all of these wonders before Pharaoh, but the Lord hardened Pharaoh's dick.
Even after, is this after the plague of people dying that he wouldn't let him go, or is that not happening?
Are you talking about the boils?
No.
Yeah. So the plague has plague has not happened.
So he's telling them it's going to happen.
He's telling him that it's going to happen. So
he's telling. But I thought he wasn't going to see Pharaoh again.
No. It's totally makes sense that you're confused because it is a little confusing. So this is literally happening at the same time, like right after they were talking, like as they were talking.
Okay.
Is essentially the idea. So they talked about the last plague.
Yes.
You know,
and then Pharaoh's while like, they're GTFO.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to see you again.
Right. So then the Lord talked to Moses while he was standing there and said, this is what's going to happen. And then Moses said it to Pharaoh.
I see.
While they're standing there.
Okay.
And this is all happening in that last interaction with each other.
Do you think Pharaoh knew Moses was talking to God?
I don't know.
Do you think Moses was like standing off to the side like, you want what? What are you doing next?
No, it's all in the darkness. So Pharaoh's just like, did you leave?
You just hear, the firstborn? All of them? Are you sure? All right. Hey, Cat- Pharaoh, you still there? Yeah.
did you leave? So, did you overhear that? Or do you need me to repeat it? The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this will be, this month is to be your first month. So this kicks off the Israelite calendar, religious calendar, right? This is the first month of their year. And it's going to start with the Passover. He says that, so the Lord says that on the 10th day of this month, each year, every man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbor. It gets very specific, and I want to kind of call out some of these specifics. The animals you choose must be year-old males without defect, and you may take them from sheep or from goats.
That's the dinner that they're eating?
Yes. This is going to be part of the Passover festival that they do every year. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month, when all the members of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight. And then they are to take some of the blood and put it on the sides and top of the door frames of the houses where they eat the lambs. That same night, they are to eat the meat roasted over fire, along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. Now,
unleavened bread.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, did you catch how I said, like, the meat roasted over fire? Like, that's how it has to be done, meat roasted over fire. What's interesting, though, is in Deuteronomy 16:7. It goes over all of this again, and it says you must boil the meat. In the original Hebrew, it says that. What's interesting, though, is there's a whole bunch of English translations of the Bible, including the NIV, that just ignore that and say roast it again. But in the original Hebrew, it says you're supposed to boil the meat. I'm going to nerd out about this a little bit because this is an example of the Bible contradicting itself, right? So, like, literally, you're supposed to, if you don't adhere to this stuff, you're supposed to be kicked out of Israel. So it's very important to get this right every year. It's so important that later in the Bible, I can't remember which king off the top of my head, you can Google this to find out, but there's another story where this king is trying to revive adherence to the law in Israel. And so he's planning a big Passover feast and everything. And he comes to this conundrum of, do I boil the meat or do I roast the meat? Mm. And he comes up with this idea, which I don't know if this is still a tradition today. Roast? Well, roast then boil. Yeah.
That seems backwards.
I think so. I think that's how it goes, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I know. Yeah, it seems like it would be better to boil than roast. But so it's an interesting, weird thing about this that there's this blatant, this blatant contradiction in this, and then it's just glossed over by English translations to not be a contradiction, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and these are the rules for what makes things kosher, right?
I don't think that this isn't like all of the rules for it. There's way more rules behind that.
Okay.
But this is part of that law set.
Gotcha.
You roast the meat over fire along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. It says again to roast it over fire with the head, legs, and internal organs.
Removed.
No. With the head, legs, and internal organs. Yeah. And it specifically says, do not eat the meat raw or boiled in water, which is interesting, but roasted over a fire.
Hmm.
It says, do not leave any of it till morning. If some is left till morning, you must burn it. This is how you are to eat it, with your cloak tucked into your belt, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. Eat it in haste. This is the Lord's Passover. The whole thing is set up to remind you of having to leave Egypt quickly.
Oh.
You know, okay. So that's kind of what it's supposed to be, the tradition for this is to remind you. So
you make it this big dinner and then you eat it really, really fast with your I'm going out clothes on.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
It's like... It's interesting.
Yeah.
Like you have your coat on, you're ready to go, and you're like, all right, let's do this real quick.
Right. And I really am curious, like, how much of this is still tradition today, or if it's a little bit more relaxed in some
I can't imagine they're still putting sigils with blood over their doorways.
I would imagine not, but I'm sure, just like Christians, there's probably going to be people who are more dogmatic about it, people who are going to be less dogmatic about it. But yeah, it's very interesting when you actually dig into some of these details. So the blood will be a sign that God will use to pass over their houses, you know.
The angel of death, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah. So one thing, and this is kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but... he says that he will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses and strike you down. And the footnote for that says in Psalm 78:49, the agent of God's wrath against the Egyptians is described as a band of destroying angels, which is kind of badass.
That's also pretty metal.
Yeah.
Why isn't that the story they lean on?
I know. I wish they had put that into the Prince of Egypt. For 7 days, you are to eat bread made without yeast. On the first day, remove the yeast from your houses. For whoever eats anything with yeast in it from the first day through the seventh must be cut off from Israel. I remember hearing while I was going through and researching this that there's sort of a light tradition in some Jewish households where you would kind of make a game out of this, like at the beginning of Passover, where you would... have everybody go searching for any yeast, you know, any yeast or bread, leavened bread and stuff like that. And it would be, I think it was something that you do with the kids, you know.
Beer?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not bread.
It's got yeast in it.
It does have yeast in it, but I don't know. I don't know how that would work.
I wonder why.
It says specifically, like, remove anything with yeast in it from your house.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess beer would be included in that. But why?
That's a really good question. Why the attack on yeast?
Yeah.
Why the attack on big yeast?
Right. So yeah, I did go through
what if a girl has a yeast infection?
You need to get her out of the house.
I mean, honestly, it happens. Vaginas get those.
Yeah.
Kids get them in their mouths when they're babies from the wild yeast. Like they can get yeast infections in their mouths.
Yeah. It's funny, that's not covered in the Bible. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised yeast infections aren't covered in this. Because it just seems like something that they would have rules about.
I wonder if those are the reasons why, though.
I don't know.
There's different yeast, right?
I would hope so. I would certainly hope so. But yeah, in two chapters of the Bible... Yeast is talked about 11 times.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and so you know, these aren't big chapters.
Did they think it was like the magic?
I don't know. It does say yeast later was often used. This is a footnote. Yeast later was often used as a symbol of sin, such as hypocrisy or malice and wickedness. Removed.
Wow.
So, and then it says here, it does say here that if anybody doesn't adhere to this, they must be cut off from Israel,
right,
which means they would be cut off by execution or by banishment.
Oh my goodness. Cause they ate a bagel.
Yeah. Yeah. During these 7 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So Moses summoned all the elders, told them to select the animals. And so at midnight, the Lord strikes down the firstborn throughout all of Egypt. There wasn't a house without someone dead in Egypt. There was a loud wailing throughout Egypt. So yeah, all the firstborns die.
It's real fucked up.
It is. And then we get to the Exodus. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up.
Time to get the fuck out.
Leave my people.
I've taken it too far."
Yep. "Leave my people, you and the Israelites, go worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said and go. And also bless me." So the Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country. The Israelites asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and clothing. And the Lord made the Egyptians favorably disposed to them. And this is how they plundered the Egyptians. There was about 600,000 men on foot besides women and children. So we are talking about probably close to 2 million people leaving Egypt all at the same time.
Right.
Right now, there's like 100 million people in Egypt. Back in the 1930s, there was less than 20 million mm-hmm. people in Egypt. So you got to imagine about 2 million people. Let's say there's 10 million people in Egypt.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah. In 1400 BCE, in 1200 BCE, whenever you think this is, like 10 million is probably very generous. 2 million people leaving is 20% of that.
Right.
That's 20% of the country leaving all at once. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot. Yeah, and we also find out at this point that they have been in Egypt for 430 years. So that kind of gives you a timeline for how long it's been since Joseph.
Right, because he's the one who brought the Israelites to Egypt.
Right.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and then they go over the Passover restrictions again with a few more details. "Any slave you have bought may eat, but you have to have them circumcised first. No uncircumcised male may eat the Passover feast."
Okay. Do they have to prove it?
I would assume so, yeah. I would assume you would
like
need to.
They're walking out in the house and they're like, "You know what you got to do."
Yeah. "Any foreigner must be circumcised." Is really just, it's a lot of making sure that the penis skin is gone before you eat.
Yeah. gets in the way.
Yeah. The Lord's going to bring you to the land, give you the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Hevites, and Jebusites. What I think is kind of interesting is this time they don't talk about Perusiites or whatever, however they're pronounced. The land of milk and honey, don't eat yeast. Moses takes the bones of Joseph, which is an interesting little point here. It comes up later for, like, when you get into the Old Testament, the fact that they have the bones of Joseph in a certain place in what ends up becoming Israel. There's a certain place that they lay the bones to rest and everything. And then the Lord shows up and goes ahead of the Israelites as a pillar of cloud. And then at night, it turns into a tornado? Yeah. And at night, he turns into a pillar of fire so that they have light to see.
Like a fire tornado?
Yeah. Which is one of the coolest parts of The Prince of Egypt, because they do that.
They do a fire tornado?
Yeah. They don't do the cloud, which is interesting, but they do the fire tornado.
Is it an actual fire tornado?
In The Prince of Egypt, it is. Yeah.
All right.
And yeah, so all of the people, as they're leaving, they grab all of these loaves of bread that don't have yeast, and they're carrying them on their backs, and they're it's just an interesting thing that it's kind of a big thing.
You know what, though? You can definitely carry more unleavened bread than you can leavened bread.
Can you?
Well, unleavened bread is flat, like matzah, right? That's a very flat bread.
Right, yes.
So, of course, you can carry way more of that.
It's like cracker.
Yeah. It takes up way less space.
Right, yeah.
But has a similar, because it's unleavened, it just doesn't have a lot of air in it. So it'll have...
It'll be more dense.
Yeah. So it has the same amount of like protein structures as leavened bread. It just doesn't have all those air bubbles.
Right.
So God was just setting them up to like be able to fit more in their backpacks.
It might be. That might be a reason behind this. Yeah.
It won't all get smushed.
Yeah. one thing. So we'll dig into the crossing of the Red Sea in the next episode. But one thing I did want to point out, the NIV says... In historical terms, the Exodus from Egypt was ignored by Egyptian scribes and recorders. No definitive monuments mention the event itself, but the stele of Merneptah, circa 1209 BCE, according to the NIV, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't trust them to get the date right, but it is, yeah, I do know that it is from around that era, claims that a people called Israel were encountered by Egyptian troops somewhere in northern Canaan. What this doesn't tell you is that it says that they were wiped out in northern Canaan around 1200 BCE. And it also doesn't tell you that this is the first in 1200. This is the first mention of Israelites ever outside of the Bible. So nobody has ever heard of them until that point. So yeah, it's interesting to point out though that they admit that the Egyptians kept no records that showed 1,200 people, 1,200, 2 million.
2 million.
2 million people that suddenly left the country.
There's just no way that 2 million people left and nobody wrote it down.
Right. Well, one thing you got to remember too is Egypt is a huge civilization. It's a superpower.
Right.
Really, for that time and era, it is a superpower. They do tons of trade with people all around the Mediterranean, with Greeks and things like, and people like that. You know, they are absolutely a huge power. So they are keeping records of everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, the notion that they would just not have any record of this is insane. They would have to have records of like, all right, suddenly we don't need as much food.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Suddenly we don't need as many houses.
So even if they were like, they had decided or been mandated as a nation not to talk about this thing that happened, right?
Yeah.
This thing we don't want to talk about, 2 million people left and it's very embarrassing. Why don't people want to live here? Why did they leave? What happened with all, why are there so many dead frogs?
Right.
Like, we're just not going to talk about any of that.
Yeah.
Because it's so embarrassing.
We're not going to talk about the fact that we suddenly need to replace all of the cattle.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying is even if they mandated, like, we're not going to mention that they left, there should still have been like inventory records.
Exactly.
Or things like that. Like, you know, all of these people died. Right? There's not a register. They didn't keep track of like deaths or anything like that. Like even families would keep track of their familial deaths.
Yeah.
And you would see that a bunch of people died all around the same time.
We would have archaeological evidence of a ton of children dying at this point.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
A bunch of bones that all have like the same.
With no apparent
age
death
on them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bunch of frog bones.
Bunch of frog bones from this time. Yeah. Yeah. But
there
would nothing
be layers
like that.
Even in the Nile, like you would be able to tell, like, based on the sediment, you can tell a lot of stuff if you core, like, the dirt under a river. Like, there's a lot of history you can tell just from those dirt samples.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so it doesn't hold a lot of water to it just because of, like, the Egyptians were very good at record keeping. especially, I mean, you know, for the time,
right.
You know,
yeah.
they were very good. They needed to be in order to have a civilization like they had.
Right.
Besides that though, you know, sure, it happened. but yeah, it's an interesting story going through those plagues and just kind of going over all the times over and over again, God hardens Pharaoh's dick and he refuses.
Really loves making that dick hard.
Yeah, he does. And it's weird how, you know, that's the thing that decides whether or not Israelites are going free. it really does bother me, like, going back over this. And we talked about this a little bit last week where, you know, just the idea that God is refusing to let Pharaoh do the right thing,
right.
Even when Pharaoh wants to do the right thing.
Yeah, he really, like, I mean, I think we've discussed this before. He really, like, chooses his battles, and it doesn't make any sense. Not, I mean, it's just the way he decides to, like, be active. And we talked about this when we talked about Balaam, right?
Yeah.
He was telling Balaam to do one thing, and then Balaam would do it, and then he would get mad at him because he didn't do it the way God wanted him to or something. I don't know. It was very much like a gaslighting sort of event. Like, right, go do this. I promise I won't be mad. And Balaam would do it. And then God would be like, oh, hell no. I can't believe you actually did it.
Right. I'm going to send my immobile angel after you.
Right.
Yeah.
And this, he's straight up like, I'm going to keep making their lives very hard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to escalate it each time. Pharaoh's going to want to give in, but we're not going to let him. We're going to keep going.
Yeah. But why? Because
I want them all.
Yeah. I want the glory.
Right.
Yeah.
I want them to know I'm not fucking around.
Yeah.
It seems like a God battle is happening.
Yeah.
This is the part that they're leaving out that I would be interested in. It seems like there is a God battle happening. And through these people who have been chosen to be like the representatives of those gods with Moses and Aaron,
mm-hmm.
Poor Aaron.
Yeah.
Nobody ever talks about poor Aaron.
He's just there to wave the staff.
He's doing all the magic.
Yeah.
Moses is just the mouthpiece.
Right. Which he's not even supposed to be that.
Right. And then you got the magicians, right, on the Egyptian sides doing their magic. And it literally, like, I'm picturing, like, a small person and then, like, a big towering god-like figure standing behind him as, like, the ring men.
Right.
Knock him out. Throw frogs at him.
Yeah.
And then the Egyptian gods are like, I'm just tired of this. This is boring. But the Christian God, the Jewish God, Yahweh, I guess is right. That's
yeah,
what we're is like, I'm just going to keep going until all of Egypt taps out.
Right. And the Egyptian gods might have been like, you guys are going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, just trust us. You're going to be fine.
Right.
And because they are, they do end up being fine.
Yeah.
Like not in this story, but like in reality, Egypt was fine. Mm-hmm. Like this did not wipe out Egypt,
right.
You know, or nothing wiped them out, you know, despite having all vegetation gone
right.
In a year, all cattle wiped out, a whole bunch of their sons killed in one night.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, having 2 million slaves suddenly go free, despite all of that, they're still okay.
Yeah.
Despite having no water that they don't dig out of the ground.
The population got skewed towards being female heavy.
Yeah, maybe.
And the women really just kept things together.
It might have been, yeah. But yeah, so I think that wraps up the story for this week. Next week, we'll dig into them crossing the Red Sea and them beginning their trip through the desert.
Yeah.
Their 40 years of wandering the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like that the Jars of Clay song was about the flood.
It was about the flood.
Wasn't 40 that days. Also 40 days?
That was 40 days. They're not in the wilderness for 40 days. They're in it for 40 years, though.
Oh, yeah. 40, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of numerology in Hebrew.
Right. I'm 40.
Yeah.
It all ties
Therefore,
together.
Therefore, God exists. Therefore, the story is real.
Age, like the amount of time that I've lived is the amount of time these people supposedly wandered in the desert is what yes. you're saying.
So if you were born while they were leaving, yeah.
I would have grown up wandering by the
time,
desert.
By the time, it would only be now that they would be going into the land of Canaan.
How do 2 million people wander a desert and not find their way out for 40 years?
You mean the desert that Moses went through on his way to?
Yeah,
to,
the one he already had.
He already went through? Yeah. Yeah. So that's, we'll be digging into it. And honestly, I haven't looked at those verses yet. And we haven't, I haven't gone back to them in a very long time.
Okay.
So, you know, it's always been described as wandering the desert. And I do kind of wonder if, is it actually wandering the desert or is it like they're kind of stuck out there?
Sure.
During that time. So it'll be interesting to see how it's described in the Bible. But
right on.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the plagues and everything.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Pew, pew, pew.
And they all lived miserably ever after.
Pew, pew.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you want to show your support, think about picking up some merch from our online store at BibleStoriesForAtheists.com/shop or BSFA.cc/shop.
I think we made the Bible better today.
Yeah.